Howdy, you buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast for Friday, November 16th, 2018. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today is John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning. So ask me how I am.
How are you?
I am good. We got that right.
All right. Let's see if Andrew can mess it up. With me also is Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, it is finally Friday and I'm in a good mood.
Hey, I believe they call that Friday feeling. So, yep. Excellent. I want to talk to both of you about a couple of topics that are pretty interesting. First, John, you wrote a piece yesterday about Siri and about
offline mode.
Offline Siri in particular.
Yeah, that really interested me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how so?
Well, I saw the original article, Apple Insider, that talked about the patent application for a local version of Siri. It's pretty clear that in the past, Siri didn't have the computational power on your iPhone to work locally, and so it would hand off to a server, and the server would do the heavy lifting and send the response back. And that's the way it had to work. But in the process, that process got me thinking about privacy issues. So what we've got is a modern system where companies want to sell you a product that sits on your desk and listens, and they want to sell it for a low price because if it could do 5 teraflops locally, it would be too expensive. So they put a little $40 box with Wi-Fi on your desk, and it sends all the information to the server. And this, as we know, has opened up all sorts of privacy and legal issues in some few cases, with all this massive amount of information being uploaded to servers and stored and used and profiled. And so this article that talked about a patent that would allow Siri to work locally got me interested in the privacy aspect that Apple champions so much. And I started thinking about ways that a local offline version of Siri would really benefit. And I made a list. And one of the most obvious things is robots. You know, in the science fiction of the past, I'm reading Alec Nevila Lee's article, his book about the glory days of science fiction and robots, called Astounding. He was on the show recently. And we always had this vision that robots would be a friendly companion that would work with us locally because it would have the processing power needed. But these smart speaker systems portend a future where the robot is not on your side necessarily all the time, but is having conversations with you, which can be very private and which might be processed in some distant location. So it appears to me that Apple's planning for the day when they might be building autonomous vehicles or systems that have to work in tunnels or caves or on the backside of ski slopes, or robots that are intimate with you in various ways. We won't get into that. And have private discussions with you, counseling and teaching and coaching, which you may not necessarily want to have uploaded to a server. So the prospect of Siri doing local processing is very intriguing and eagerly awaited. And the thing that allows it is the A12 neural engine, which can do 5 trillion operations per second, maybe not floating point operations, but 5 trillion operations per second. And allows it to do the image processing and face ID and machine and support machine learning. So we're getting to the point where the iPhone has the computational power to keep discussions local, keep them private. You may have a conversation someday in the future with Siri where you say, you know, can you keep that between us? And Siri says, of course, it's going nowhere.
So, Andrew, what's your first reaction to this? Because I know what the first thing is that I think of. So I want to know what the first thing is that you think of.
Well, let me back up a little bit for listeners, because I actually wrote something about this as well.
Oh.
So basically, in the patent, there would be, it sounds like, 2 different versions of Siri. So there would be the Siri on your device and then the Siri on the server.
Okay.
And when you ask it a question, It would try to figure out which Siri could best answer it by computing what it called a usefulness score.
All right.
So if the local device Siri has a higher score, or if that's the only available option, let's say you're out of range of Wi-Fi, then that would be the one that would responded.
Okay.
But if the connection to the server is better, or if it could maybe better handle it for a complex question, then that one would be the one to answer.
So when I talk to Siri, when I have to ask information and retrieve it, generally what I need to know would not be local information unless Siri was smart enough to know, I ask you questions about the Portland Trailblazers all the time, so you should have a lot of local information about the Portland Trailblazers. Because I'm going to need to know how high Damian Lillard ranks in the all-time scores. This is basketball, John, so it'll be okay. I'll get out of sports in a minute.
That's okay. I'm sitting here watching paint dry.
You're probably having more fun doing that than listening to me talk about basketball. I understand. But like, if I ask a lot of questions about the Trailblazers, then machine learning would be a thing that would go, you know, you ask a lot of questions about the Blazers. I should have their schedule. I should have some statistics. I should have current information about the roster. You know, maybe some things like that. Because honestly, a lot of the things that I ask her when I ask her questions, I ask her sports questions, like generally because I have found that between the two assistants in my house, the A lady and the S lady, the A lady is terrible at sports and the S lady is much better at that. So if I need to know who won that game, or I need to track the Mariners because my dad is going to want to talk to me about the Mariners, I find that I do better with the S lady than with the A lady. So my first thought, John, when I was looking at your piece yesterday, was this is going to be a massive amount of data that sits on my phone.
Yeah.
In order for this to work as it should. And when I looked at it, the thing I was missing was Andrew's piece, because I'm like, I normally want to know things that she's going to have to go ask. If she doesn't have reception, she's not going to be able to tell me a lot of the things that I tend to want to know. Is that person still alive? Who directed that movie? How old is whoever? The kind of stuff that you normally just go get Wikipedia for. If I can just ask her and have her tell me and save me a bunch of typos in trying to find out, then that's what I'll do.
There's a counter case to that. If you're trying to process, you're on a ski slope where there's no cell phone connection and you're trying to process some great photos of snow-capped mountains and you don't have... never mind. I barked up the wrong tree. Bark, bark. Never mind.
Ding.
I was thinking something else.
If I had your Kelly Bell, I'd ding it right now.
Yeah. I think there's a class of processes that Siri could conduct locally with your phone.
Oh, sure.
That wouldn't necessarily need to appeal to a server.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that, that she would be able to do offline, and particularly as it gets smarter. One thing that I've noticed with a number of different pieces of technology I use on my phone is that they get better the more you use them. So people talk about autocorrect or like the predictive text at the top of the keyboard sometimes being really awful, like when you get a new phone. But if you just stick to it, it learns and those suggestions will get better. And so that's kind of a thing I've wondered about. Now, Andrew, in the piece that you looked at, were there any sort of examples or anything, or the piece that you wrote, were there any sort of examples of this in action?
Not that I found.
Okay.
So
it's just going to rate, is this something I have to go get, or can I answer locally and then do that thing?
One of the examples I gave in my article was Siri being part of a car autonomous system, which is not only responding to your driving commands, but is having to make local decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a different system, maybe, or maybe it's just an augmentation of the entire AI. But one example I was thinking about was being in a tunnel Mm-hmm. Having a conversation with Siri about where you want to go next, and Siri can't access the web.
Right.
So Siri is talking to you about what you want to do, and it has to have some notions about where it came from and where it was, and make projections about when it's going to come out of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And then maybe steer by an accident in the process, and do all sorts of local processing on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one example I thought of.
So, Andrew, how does this sound to you as an interesting evolution of Siri?
It makes sense to me that this would be the next step of Siri. One of the examples that John was giving is privacy. I think this would be a big privacy win, basically, mm-hmm. because I think Siri already does some things offline and only does certain things at queries the server. So mm-hmm. if you could move more of that offline, that would be a really good thing for privacy.
Yes. Absolutely. And speaking of privacy, we have a little more to talk about with regards to privacy, especially as it pertains to your phone. But first, we're going to do a couple of sponsor. Take a moment for some sponsors here. And we're going to start with LinkedIn Jobs. The right hire can make a huge impact, so it's super important to find the right person. You can post on a job board and hope, but how often are you hanging out on job boards? Post your job where people go every day to make connections and discover job opportunities, and that's LinkedIn. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited a job board, but 9 out of 10 are open to new opportunities. And with 70% of the U.S. workforce on LinkedIn, posting on LinkedIn is the best way to get your job opportunity in front of more of the right people. Head over to linkedin.com/TDO and get $50 off your first job post. Again, that's linkedin.com/TDO for $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions do apply. The other sponsor we have today is OpsGenie, and incidents are inevitable, and it all comes down to how your company responds, and that's why there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. OpsGenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan service disruptions and better manage when there's an unplanned incident. They can respond quickly and efficiently, and you can make sure that the right people get notified, because there's ways to monitor and get alerts from tools like New Relic and Jira and hundreds more. So visit OpsGenie.com to sign up for your free company account and add up to 5 team members. Now, the next topic we want to talk about is, Andrew, a piece you posted this morning related to text messages and being hacked.
Yes, once again, we have a data leak.
This here's my shocked face.
So this company called Vazaz or Voxox, formerly Telcentris.
Okay.
They're based in San Diego. So apparently they had the server full of SMS text messages that was not secured at all.
Oh.
And all of those, this big database had tens of millions of messages. You know, this included password reset links, two-factor authentication codes, shipping notifications. I mean, basically
everything
kind of text that you can get. Yeah. So I'm not really sure how long the server was exposed for, but a security researcher found it through this search engine called Shodan, mm-hmm. which is something I've heard of before. And, you know, he alerted the company. They took it offline. But what was a little bit troubling is that all of this database was compiled in using a certain technology that makes it basically really easy to browse. Like, it sounds like anyone could have, if they got in there, they would have been able to, you know, browse through all the text messages without a problem.
Awesome. That's what we like to hear. Yeah. Fabulous. So what does this actually mean? Because the thing that I was sort of curious about with this in particular is how this server ended up having these messages.
Well, it sounded like it might be local to the area. That's what I wasn't really sure about.
Okay.
So, let's see.
Because that was the thing that I mostly wondered about with regards to how possible it was that this was a thing that was going to affect loads and loads of people, or is it mostly just if you're somebody who lives in San Diego or your number is from Telcentris in San Diego, then maybe your stuff was going through the server.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it says the VoxOx customer. So if you know anybody who is with them, maybe you should find a Black Friday deal and get them a phone on a different network. That might be great. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about with this, Andrew, is that at the bottom of your piece, you mentioned that you hope that Senator Ron Wyden's bill gets passed. So go ahead and tell everybody else a little bit about that. Ron Wyden is my senator, so I already know what he's up to. I call his office all the time. So I'm going to let you go ahead and break it down.
Yeah, so basically he introduced this bill which would give executive harsher punishments for these kind of things. You know, if their data breaches are because of some type of negligence. I mean, you know, accidents mm-hmm. happen, but if it was because they just didn't have good enough security, mm-hmm. then they could be fined or even put in jail. Which I see as a big pro-consumer thing.
Oh, yes. Ron Wyden's pretty good about that for the most part.
I haven't thought about that.
Yeah.
I don't like that idea too much because I think it would put a chill on businesses. It punches a hole through the corporate protection umbrella. Keeps corporate managers from being sued incessantly. We have the legal system in place to protect corporate, except for certain rare cases. I don't think this one qualifies. But what I'd like to see is, you know, we license building engineers and bridge engineers, and we can pull their license. We license doctors, and if they do malpractice, we pull their license. Mm-hmm. The health department basically licenses restaurants, and if a restaurant starts killing people with food poisoning, then the health department pulls their license to operate. Mm-hmm. Why don't we license companies that handle personal data? And if there's a data breach, we pull their license.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What I like about what Ron Wyden proposed is that it's not necessarily a chilling effect, because what it's gunning for is negligence, not...
but that's hard to prove. We've seen over and over again.
It's not, though.
Past few years.
There are a lot of cases, though, where we've seen...
intent. Have to prove willful intent to prove negligence, I think.
Well,
and if it's a software upgrade that has a bug in it and you didn't catch it, is that negligence?
No. Negligence is the password is the default. The password on the router that gets you into the server room is the default password, and it's a consumer grade router. That's what I'm talking about. Like a clear, obvious case where this is what happened. Because we've seen that, and we've seen it often.
Yeah, but you can't hold the corporate officer liable for what the IT manager fails to do.
Well, I'd like to hold somebody responsible.
Yeah.
And we can discuss the degree of that punishment later, but somebody needs to be responsible, and that's why I like this, because this is at least somebody taking a shot at making this happen. And it would be refined, and it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be the CEO of Equifax who gets let off in handcuffs for giving the whole world, everyone in America's social security number. That's not what's going to happen. That's never what's going to happen. But making it a penalty that makes it worth more people's while in order to make sure that some of this basic stuff is happening. Because it's really easy to prove you weren't negligent, even if something still happened. But you have to actively not be negligent. And so that's the part that I think needs to be addressed.
I would rather go the route of fact of the data breach is a factual phenomena, can be proven, can be shown. Mm-hmm. engineers can look at the system and say, yeah, data was leaked. Mm-hmm. That's pretty easy to prove. And then you just say your license to operate is suspended. And that's pretty matter of fact. That's hard to challenge. But the negligence situation and people going to jail for things that they tried really hard to avoid and couldn't, it just makes my stomach turn a little bit.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, John, and say that you have lived longer than me. And so you've lived in the United States longer than me. And you should know that's never how that goes. Because I know that's never what happens. Like I said, they're never going to take the CEO of the company away for giving my credit card out to whoever got it. Especially like, that's never what happens.
Donated a lot of money to their local congressman.
See, that's never what happens. So I don't want to be super cynical about this, but because I really do think that Ron Wyden is onto something, because there should be a penalty, because it should be worth someone's while to make sure that you're not negligent. And not being negligent seems like a really low bar that most people should be able to meet. I like the idea of licensing, but immediately you get into how much data do you collect before you need a license, and how many places are going to do it without a license, and how do I check if the place I'm giving my data to has a license? And there's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes into that. And I sort of like the idea that there is a law, and if you break it, you go to jail. That seems pretty good to me.
We did it with drones. We can do it with businesses.
We'll see.
Okay, so I think this case is a little bit different. I kind of agree that it probably would be negligence, just because they weren't even trying for security.
Yeah.
The server wasn't protected with a password at all. So
right.
they didn't even try.
Yeah, so this is negligence like road signs. You know, when you see the funny road sign on the side of the road because there is no password.
That's a pretty easy case to prove. What about a very difficult, complex case where they did everything they thought they needed to do and there was still a data breach? And so how do you...
Well, if they did everything, then they're not negligent.
The lawyers and people who are defending themselves are very creative in figuring out ways
Exactly. And I'm not those people. So I can't say for sure. But it would seem to me, as a legal system spectator, that proving negligence, even if there's a whiff of negligence, it should be pretty straightforward. You should be able to tell whether or not, like, this didn't even have a password. That seems pretty clear to me. So,
Do you write up a list of standards for what constitutes negligence? And what if something happens that's not on the list? Do they get off?
Well, John, that's not up to me. I'm not a judge. And I'm not a lawyer. For the record, Internet, just in case anybody had any doubt, I'm not a judge, nor am I a lawyer.
Proving willful negligence is sticky business. It really is.
Well, I think willful is the key. I'm just talking about negligence. It doesn't have to be willful. So you can be negligent and not have meant to be by just not bothering to set a password. That's pretty negligent. So anyway, when we figure out how we can license all of this, I'll call Wyden's office and I'll see if I can get him to submit another bill. So in the meantime, I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And with that, I will talk to all of you next week. I'm your host. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.